beginning another edition of Ag Matters with Amy Pettit.
Yeah. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thanks,
go for
sir.
It.
Yeah. Good morning, Liz. I'm so glad to have you.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm excited to be on here. Grow join the growing group of illustrious participants in this new radio show.
Yeah. I was actually chatting with the director of Ag last night, and he said, so when am I going to get to be on the show again? And I said, well, man, I'm kind of booked out for the next 6 weeks. And he said, what? And I said, listen, I'll make room for you in March. How's that? But anyways, this morning, my guest is Liz Snyder Hodges. And Liz is a colleague and friend of mine who I'll let you, Liz, kind of go into who and what you are. But I've invited Liz on the show this morning because of her involvement with the Alaska Food Policy Council. Kind of a mouthful there, but we're going to talk about the who, what, when, where, and why of the AFPC. But first, let's hear from Liz about Liz. Who are you? A little bit about your background, why you ended up here in Alaska, and then let's jump into AFPC.
Sure. Great. Okay. Well, I'm Liz Snyder for Keep It Easy. And, my day job, I am an associate professor at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. We have a Master of Public Health program here in Anchorage on campus, and that's where I actually first plugged in to the Alaska Food Policy Council, or AFPC. It was through some research and community engagement work that I did with a colleague, Shannon Donovan,
right,
who pulled me into
that.
The food world several years ago. And I've not looked back. I fell in love, found my calling,
and
got to the great opportunity to then join the board of the Food Policy Council and now sit as one of the co-chairs there.
Yep.
And so that's where we are today. I ended up in Alaska because of my work with the university, got that job and came up here. My husband is a fisherman and skier, so it wasn't too hard of a sell to get him to come on up here with me. And,
Aren't you guys from the South? How did he end up being a skier from?
We are from the South.
Like the deep South, right?
I don't always offer that information right away. I'm from Florida originally. He's a Texan. But he went to school in the Northeast.
Okay, there we go.
In college. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, so you joined AFPC. Has it been 3?
God, Amy, I was thinking about that before hopping on this call this morning, and I think we're between 3 and 4 years at this point.
Yeah.
I think that's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll just talk a little bit about the background of the Food Policy Council before you joined, because I happened to be involved from the beginning. And as tends to happen, I think, with moms, you keep track of time by the age of your children. And so I was pregnant with Lila, my second daughter, when we first started talking about the Food Policy Council, and Lila will turn 7 next month. So that kind of gives a little bit of a time frame about how long the Food Policy Council has been kind of at least in discussion mode. And then now we're an official 501c3, C6. We're an official nonprofit. But in the beginning, there was myself and Danny Constantine, who at the time was the FSA executive director, and there was a chef, Chef Dave Thorne, and Allie Harvey, who was employed at Alaska Center for the Environment, and Diane Peck from Health and Social Services, also a state employee, and I was a state employee at the time. And we were just talking about the need for a group of people to be discussing food policy issues in Alaska. And there was a gathering at an Alaska Farm Bureau annual meeting, which was good. It's good to have that producer perspective on, you know, food policy issues that affect food production. And there was a lot of people in the room that seemed really engaged and encouraged and wanted somebody to be focused on this issue. And so then, you know, fast forward 7 years, and where are we now? And what have we done? And why are we here? And let's jump into some of that, Liz. Let's talk about...
Sure.
Yeah, let's talk about... First, some of the food research or the food policy research that the Food Policy Council has engaged in.
Oh, that's a great place to start. And yeah, that's really one of the 3 or 4 areas that lately we've really been trying to emphasize that the AFPC is a great resource for and wants to engage further in. So we've done a few things, right?
Yep.
I think the first thing well, gosh, does this date back to 2012, maybe 2013? We contracted with ICER, the Institute for Social and Economic Research,
right,
at UAA. Really, the task of that effort was to collate the existing databases and information pertaining to various aspects of the food system, so we could kind of find places where we could put our finger on the pulse, so to speak,
right,
of different aspects of Alaska's food system. So if we were to do future evaluations, we knew where
we'd
to go
where
for
we
a
were.
Baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's I want to interrupt you just for a second, because that is kind of a different term, food system. I think when people think about or they hear the term Alaska Food Policy Council, they're probably thinking, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean? Well, when we break it down to the food system, which when I came to this table, it was from the Alaska Grown Division of Agriculture perspective. And my food system focus was production agriculture, right? That's all I ever wanted to talk about or was focused on. But there's so many other parts to our Alaskan food system. So tell us about some of those other parts so people know what we're talking about when we say food system.
Sure. Well, if you live and eat, you are part of the food system.
Right.
It's an easy way to plug in and see where you fit. But more specifically, you can think about it, and there's a bunch of ways to think about it. But
sure.
You'll hear farm to table or farm to, some people like to insert the recycle, because then what do you do with the food that comes off your table?
Right, the
but
waste.
But you can also, exactly, the food waste, which is another fabulous resource that's underutilized.
Absolutely.
But we can think about it from where you plugged in originally, Amy, from the food production side. So some folks call that the food availability aspect,
sure,
of the food system. So
yep.
That would include production, distribution, processing for value-added products. So that
harvesting.
Harvesting.
Because we,
absolutely.
Yeah, in Alaska, when we talk about food, although my lens is always agriculture, there's this whole movement, and obviously a much bigger part of all the Alaska economy is fishing, right? So the harvesting side of the equation.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me. I kind of, these days, I get tunnel vision into the more agriculture end of things, but of course fisheries is a huge economy here in Alaska. It's one
yep.
that my husband works actively in. He always reminds me not to forget that when I'm talking about the Food Policy Council. We have some great reps on the board on
we
that
do.
End of things. So moving from the food availability, so is it even available? Are we making it? Are we processing it? Are we getting it out to the folks? So then that kind of brings you to food accessibility.
Right.
So where is it ending up? In what stores? At what price? Is it close to people? Is it what they want?
Yeah.
Is
it culturally relevant?
Yeah. So
new terminology for a lot of us when we started having these discussions that it's, again, for me, it's always, is it Alaska grown? Why aren't you buying Alaska grown? And people pointed out to me, Amy, those foods are not always culturally relevant depending on where you are in Alaska. Some people don't want to eat, you know, harvested foods or grown foods like that. That's not what they're wanting.
Or it may not be in a processed form that they know what to do with it.
Right.
Or it may not be within their budget all
Absolutely.
Of the time. So those are kind of the issues that fall under that category. The Alaska Food Policy Council is working we work closely with the Alaska Food Coalition, and they're mm-hmm. very involved in hunger issues.
So huge, huge issue in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
One
huge.
In five Alaskans is considered hungry, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it's on par with the national average.
Okay.
So then you can move to the third aspect of food systems and food security. And I guess I just threw out another term. So when we say food security, we're talking about, and there's a variety of definitions.
Right.
Long
what does
story
that
short,
mean?
What are we talking about? We're talking about, does a family know that where their next meal is going to come from, or are they worried that they may not have their next meal? And you can define what that meal should be depending on
sure.
your definition. But
sure.
again, going back to cultural appropriateness and affordability, and is it healthy?
And that reminds me, one of the big focuses 7-8 years ago when we first started talking about food policy, the food security discussion was more around because Alaska imports so much of our food, what if a big natural disaster happened and the road system was cut off or the port was shut down? Because Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, had, you know, had just happened a few years before that, and we saw what happened with food availability and food security in that region. And so that really kind of made a lot of people think about, well, where does my food in Alaska come from? And what if? And so, yeah, that's another, you know, some people think about food security in that regard. And at the Food Policy Council level, we certainly think about that. But we're also talking about just the very next meal. Where is your next meal coming from? And that kind of defines your food security.
That's a great point. Yeah, the food security issue can go all the way from the state perspective, the 30,000 foot view, all the way down to an individual home. Absolutely. Yeah. And that the fact that we import 95% of our food, that in and of itself isn't that unique.
It's true.
And I wish we had a hard and fast number. We don't have a hard and fast number for that. That's more of a general estimate.
Yeah. Generally accepted.
We don't, Amy, I think I heard from you actually when I was up here just getting into the food world. You said something about we don't have a reverse pipeline. So,
right.
That really stuck with me. So we're importing a whole bunch of food. And granted, we have some a great long storied history of folks practicing subsistence.
Absolutely.
And being very self-reliant. But for better or for worse, that's not the majority of us anymore in Alaska. So that's a source of concern about the high imports.
Right.
But we also don't export a similar amount. So if things really did get bad, like you were saying, we wouldn't have these our own internal reserves to fall back on.
Right.
The trouble.
We always, that pipeline idea was told to me when I was working at the Division of Ag, and we were trying to get our wholesale food distributors in Anchorage to buy more Alaska-grown products to put into, you know, restaurants and institutions, et cetera. And those words were used by one of those distributors. He said, you know, Amy, we have this pipeline of food that comes to Alaska every week, you know, multiple times a week, trucks come in, boats come in, et cetera. And we're just so used to getting this food from outside, and to interrupt that flow with Alaska grown products for 6 to 8 weeks or 12 weeks in the summer, it's kind of inconvenient and annoying. And I kind of looked at it and I thought, but wait a minute, but you have to support these Alaska-grown farmers. You have to use Alaska-grown when you can. And then he just kind of looked at me and he said, well, look, if our customers want it, we'll get it. But, you know, that the pipeline keeps flowing. And if you know, if our customers aren't asking for it, we're going to continue to give them the outside product. And that was really disheartening to me, but that's kind of where that terminology came from. And of course, again, pointing out the fishery system exports a tremendous amount of seafood, right?
Right.
They have that system down. But our Alaska-grown production of other foods is so minimal that no one is really even considering exporting any of that yet because we have so many Alaskans to feed.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And just looping back around to that third component before I forget, because it's another thing that I wanted to highlight because the Food Policy Council is also engaged in this aspect, is something called food utilization, which is an even more broad term that pulls in some more disparate aspects of the system. So talking about sometimes folks put the cultural preference under that category. But also food safety falls under that, and that is something that we do not have adequately funded up here in terms of the human resources and the financial resources to inspect food businesses as often as we should. And,
right.
and the reason we do that, of course, is the protection of public health.
Yep. Big issue, big issue. One of our colleagues on the Food Policy Council Governing Board, which just to point out, I don't know that I've said that. I think Liz identified herself as a co-chair, but I am also a governing board member. And one of our other governing board members is Lorinda Latka from Department of Environmental Conservation. And she's constantly keeping us appraised of the food inspection type issues that are happening across the state. And it's a big issue. That budget has been cut down to just barely, you know, bare bones, and they do not have enough staff to, you know, to fully, well, I don't want to say that, you know, our food system is not protected, you know, but they're doing the best they can with very limited number of people. And as a citizen, I've seen, you know, some results of that. I've heard these issues about, you know, different restaurants and even places like, you know, where you go and get your nails done and salons and these places that aren't being inspected like they used to be because the staff numbers are so low.
Right.
And I suppose it'll just take a big outbreak of something for us to wake up and go, oh, this is a priority.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that might be what it comes to. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the more on the food security and food inspection side of it. So where are we at in our chain? We've touched about production and we've talked about distribution and food waste a little bit and food accessibility. Mm-hmm. What's the other link in our circle there?
So that was it. So so we've got the food availability, we've got the food accessibility, and then there's the food utilization.
Okay.
And those are the three primary ones. And folks like to point at that and say, you know, if you have a weak link in any of those aspects, in any of those three components, in any of those subcomponents within those three categories, then you are at risk of being food insecure.
Right.
So it's, thinking of it as a chain rather than these individual separated compartments really makes you realize that it's a system that relies on itself.
Yep, absolutely. So, you mentioned the ICER report. Let's talk a little bit about the Ken Meter report that Food Policy Council also commissioned, because that's kind of one of our bigger, more, I don't know, I think we should spend, our Food Policy Council members should spend more time reading back through that and looking at Ken's recommendations and acting on some of those, because it was such a good report.
I agree. Yeah, I think one thing I like to point out whenever I'm telling anybody about the report is, if you have an interest in food systems, if you have an interest in food security, and you want to get involved or in your community, you're hearing some issues that need to be addressed, and if you're having a hard time figuring out how to prioritize some of those, I think the Ken Meter report is a great place to start. You can, if you've got some time, we're looking at an 80-plus page report.
Yeah, it's a big one.
He does a fantastic job. I learned so much from reading that report. He starts out with a wonderful history.
Yep.
Of food production in Alaska. So you have some really good historical context of where we've been, where we're coming from. And then he sets up what some of our strengths are in Alaska, what some of our challenges are. And then he wraps up with a whole list of categorized suggestions.
Yeah, recommendations.
For things that we can do to strengthen the food system. And I was really impressed and pleased with the fact that he didn't just focus on all the things that aren't great about the Alaska food system.
Sure, yeah.
He worked really, really hard to highlight the things that are wonderful, the things that are working, and the innovations that people are applying across the state.
Yep.
Talking about how we can build those.
Absolutely.
So you really come away from the report feeling positive
about absolutely.
Our
yeah.
potential.
Yep.
Yeah,
I would agree
and if
with
you
that.
Don't have the time for the whole thing, we also, on the Food Policy Council website, which I should spell out for folks at some point, you can also just look at the executive summary, which
absolutely.
Gives you the big points and the recommendations.
Yeah, so let's do that before we forget. There's lots of different ways to connect with the Alaska Food Policy Council. Again, we're a nonprofit established here in Alaska. We have governing board members kind of across the state. We have a Facebook page that people can connect with us on. We have a website, which is
the AK Food Policy Council .wordpress.com.
Okay, perfect. AK Food Policy Council .wordpress.com. So that's our website. And like I said, we're a little bit active on social media with Facebook and we are or aren't on Instagram. I can't remember.
We have been historically.
Okay.
With the departure of our Vista, it's not been as active, but the account still exists.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's. And you can join our listserv too. I'd like to highlight. Mm-hmm. You can do that if you go to the webpage.
There's a newsletter. Okay. I think the governing board has decided that newsletter is going to quarterly, right?
That's, yeah, quarterly to biannually. We're going to discuss that at our face-to-face meeting.
Okay. So that brings up a point that we just might want to throw out there because it's a point of discussion right now. The Food Policy Council is an all-volunteer board at this point. We're people that are engaged in the food system in a variety of different ways, from fisheries to hunger, food security, et cetera. But we work without an executive director and without like a home necessarily. We're all kind of do our own jobs and then do this Food Policy Council on the side. But we're in transition. We've had Vista volunteers almost from the beginning, involved with us, helping us along with the administrative side of the job. But we hope to really take the next, you know, step, the next big jump, and get to the point where we have at least a part-time paid executive director in the short-term future, right?
That is a primary goal. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Yeah. And that'll just help us with, you know, focusing on this, these important issues. So let's, you know, Liz, it's amazing. We're, you know, we're three quarters of the way done already with our time.
I was looking at the time. You weren't kidding when you said this thing went fast.
It goes really fast. But one thing that I want to talk to people about is what we have done and some of the things that the Food Policy Council has been instrumental in kind of accomplishing. And I think one of the driving factors in forming the Food Policy Council, as I remember it, I was at the Division of Ag, and Diane Peck again is at Department of Health and Social Services, and she kind of came to me and she asked me. She said, "You know, if you could do one thing, you know, if you had an unlimited budget, or you could, you know, just solve one short-term problem in the food system or in, you know, agriculture, et cetera, what would it be?" And at the time, we had a lot of growth in the farmers market industry in Alaska. There were new farmers markets popping up all over the place. But we had this issue where folks who get supplemental nutrition benefits, the SNAP benefits in Alaska, there was no way for them to use their SNAP benefits at the farmers market. And this was a trend across the nation where the state departments of agriculture were trying to remove those barriers to accessibility, to make it available, because that those SNAP benefits come on a, you know, a debit card. And lots of farmers markets didn't have card readers at the time, and it was just too expensive. It wasn't something that they wanted to bring to the market. And so through with Diane's assistance from Department of Health and Social Services at the Division of Agriculture, we were able to launch a grant program where we bought card readers for the farmers markets. We kind of removed all the costs. We also paid for staff time for, you know, the farmers market could hire someone to run the card reader, to take the SNAP benefits, to distribute the coins that could then be used at the market. So I just want to throw that out there as one of those initial successes that, because of our Food Policy Council colleagues working together and figuring out the system, we were able to get the grant money, hire the people, and that was successful for 3 or 4 years running before the grant money kind of ran out. But still, many farmers markets, they recognize the benefit through that grant program, and now they've still maintained that system. They're still finding ways to make those SNAP cards, you know, eligible at the farmers markets. And that provides access to healthy, fresh, nutritious food for a lot more people in Alaska.
Yes, that's a huge, and I think that was one of AFPC's first kind of broadly impactful successes.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see that, if we can get that back and recharge, that would be fantastic. The need is still there.
Absolutely.
I think it's really great, though, that we've folks now know about it. They know it's possible. They've had a little taste of what could be.
And
if we can continue off of that success. And around that same time, right, Amy, your recollection will be better than me. We've also been successful in advocating for the Nutritional Alaskan Foods in Schools program.
Absolutely, yep.
Farm to School, again, seeing some more recent challenges, but those still remain very much on our radar, and would like to see funding continue and even increase
absolutely.
For those efforts. I mean, we're educating our future consumers and making sure they have access to healthy food. And if it's promoting local, then we're also supporting our farmers.
Yep. That's been a huge one. And again, it's an educational system, not just educating those kids that are, you know, eating hot lunch at the schools, but even all the personnel at the schools, the Nutrition Services Center folks, the Department of Education folks, reminding them that there are Alaska grown and harvested options across the state. That brings to mind the idea that in some of the village schools and some of the more rural schools, we've assisted with the idea of them being able to use harvested foods out in the villages in their school lunch programs. I'm not as familiar with that one. Lorinda was kind of one of the leads on that one, but maybe you want to touch on that, Liz.
Sure. And yeah, Lorinda would be a much better spokesperson for that issue. But really, it's part of a larger overall push also involving Gary Ferguson and folks at UAA to get more wild Alaskan foods into various institutions.
Right.
So in addition to schools,
hospitals,
healthcare facilities, detention centers.
Pioneer homes,
exactly, where you have a consistent population of individuals that need to eat and with some unique food preferences oftentimes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reason behind, at least my understanding behind why it hasn't been done to a higher degree than it has been, has to do with we've not been good about educating the purchasers and the suppliers of these foods, or even just the donators of these foods oftentimes, what is and isn't allowed.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the view is that you can actually do less than you actually can.
Exactly.
In terms of donating some of those foods. So there's been some clarifying documents around that, and Lorinda would be the perfect person to contact for more info on that.
And we even advocated at the national level with that. I recall that Senator Murkowski and Representative Young were kind of instrumental in moving some legislation forward at the national level that allowed, you know, that these state institutions and other institutions could serve these foods, particularly in that regard. It was about donated foods. If out in the village a moose was harvested and they wanted to donate it to the school or the hospital or wherever, there was this thought that that couldn't be done for some reason. But we made it they helped make it very clear that it is allowable, it is legal, and it should be happening more.
Yeah, it just comes down to the ability to receive it and safely process it.
Yeah.
Is a big component.
Yeah. Yep. So those are some of our successes. What we also successfully held the Alaska Food Festival. Maybe we can.
We
just have a couple minutes, but we did that. We've done that a couple of times now, which has really been an incredible gathering of Alaskans.
Over 300 people last time.
Yeah. And so many different focal points, from workshops about how to compost to, you know, policy type related issues, where we had our colleagues from Canada come and tell us about how they were impacting their food policy systems. Just so many different things happen at those food festivals.
Yeah, live animal demos.
Oh, yeah.
Presentations for cooperative extension, food research.
Yeah.
It really has been a great time, and we're planning our third one.
We are.
It's really exciting, and it's going to be in Fairbanks this year. So if folks aren't able to attend Anchorage, but you're going to be up in Fairbanks, we're trying to make access fair and equal across the state.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming this fall, so stay tuned for a save the date.
Yeah, and we'll just emphasize for folks to, you know, find us on Facebook, check out the website, join the listserv to kind of keep up with these policy issues. We got less than a minute here, Liz, so I'm just going to thank you for coming on. And we'll both be headed down to Juneau here coming up in a couple of weeks to advocate again for Alaska food policy issues with our local legislature. So looking forward to that.
Likewise. Yeah. And just to emphasize, AFPC, we really just want to be a resource for all Alaskans.
Absolutely.
If you have a question, a need, a problem, and you don't know where to go,
bring it to us.
We're a great place to turn to for help.
Yep. Thank you so much, Liz. Alaska
Food
Policy
Council. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. Ag matters.
It does.
All right.
Take care.
Yep. Oh, next week we are going to have a guest from the State Division of Agriculture, Jody Anderson. And Jody is an expert on so many different things, but right now she runs the Farm to School program, and she helps with a lot of different things that are going on over there at the Division of Ag. So she's going to update us and give us some talking points about what's going on there at the division.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back next week.